In this episode, hear about my dinner in Amsterdam with a Facebook executive, why Facebook is embarrassed about Facebook Live, and I'm also going to give you my marketing strategy that Subway sandwiches should use to absolutely destroy Jimmy John's.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery. Brought to you by Wirebuzz.
Heyo! All right. Well, this episode of the podcast is recorded live from Amsterdam at the site of ECCO, the European Cancer Conference. And as a regular listener of this podcast, you know that I'm the grandson, I'm a son, and I'm also a husband of cancer survivors. You know, thankfully, my stepmom just got her 5-year all clear, and my wife also received her 3.5 all year, or 3.5 all clear. That's right. And that's why in my free time, when I'm not running the Wirebuzz agency, I'm a cancer patient advocate. You know, it's a big part of my life purpose. It's really the best way that I can thank God for the health of the women in my life is to use digital marketing and my savvy and expertise to better educate patients, their loved ones, and to also educate the physicians that are, practicing all over the world. You know, you see me doing this for video. But I do it also for cancer and cancer patients and for the medical community. In fact, as I walk through the European Cancer Conference, we've generated quite a name for ourselves. So, you know, the leading breast cancer doctors in the world on this trip have pulled me aside and asked me, how do they do Facebook Live and how do they create their own videos? And one of them just texted me on my phone, and she was like, "Todd, great seeing you. On my way to the airport, please send me a list of everything I need in order to create my own little video studio," which I just absolutely love because, you know, we used to live in a world where you had to have insurance to see or to learn from that doctor, right? And the doctors that I often interact with are the biggest gurus in the world in the fight against breast cancer, or the fight against cancer, or whatever the health condition might be. And I've become friendly with them, but I don't know if I could afford to see them. Maybe I could. I don't know if many could. And so when they share their information in video, and they do it to help increase awareness, they end up touching more lives than possible. Now, I want to give you a little bit of a background of where I am right now. I am in the heart of Amsterdam. It's such the heart of Amsterdam that out in front of my hotel, I'm at this little coffee place that's a coffee place during the day. But last night when I went to bed, it was a full-on bar. And now it's just nursing people with coffee to get them up and going again. But I'm in this little entrance courtyard. I'll take some photos and share it with you. And out front is a stunning statue that at first glance was a phallic symbol, but now it has something to do with some war in honor of some people. And around me is a huge, gorgeous museum and hotels and homes and a really tight, densely populated area with cobblestones and the guys sitting right outside the door here where I'm recording or having their coffee and their smoking their cigarettes and tampering with the fragrance of my leather jacket, and I'm sure you get it. Well, anyway, when I arrived here in Amsterdam, it wasn't easy to get here. Let me just say that. It took us 24 hours to get to Amsterdam. I'm going to be giving you the latest in video marketing news and some really impressive applications. I'm going to tell you about my case study that I have been teasing for some weeks and how that's been going. And I'm also going to bring you up to speed on video marketing news that matters to masters. All right? Sure, I'm in Amsterdam right now filming videos for 2 different clients. Our crew is out here with me. We traveled out together. And, but I'm also going to skip 2 rocks with 1 toss. I'm going to be hosting a Facebook Live broadcast on Breast Cancer Answers, which is the patient awareness initiative that I co-founded with the president of the American Society of Breast Surgeons, Dr. Jay Harness. And we co-founded that site like, I don't know, 6-7 years ago when my stepmom was diagnosed with breast cancer. And we've generated on that Breast Cancer Answers platform 1,400 videos of the leading experts that I've befriended that are answering questions submitted in to patients. So we got over 1,400 videos, generated over 10 million views and 700,000 followers, literally my way to give back to this great world. You know, I'm typically at like 20 to 25 conferences a year. And when I attend cancer conferences, I love interviewing rock stars, just the big doctors that most don't get access to, and sharing their information with patients all over. So tomorrow on Breast Cancer Answers, I'm going to be doing a Facebook Live interview with one of the big rock stars, Dr. Beth Dupree, about her tips for the newly diagnosed patient, really everything that the newly diagnosed patient needs to know. And that should be really valuable information. It's been 22 years since the last time I was in Amsterdam. And, you know, just back then, I graduated from the University of Arizona. I did 90 days of backpacking through Europe and Eastern Europe and the Mediterranean. And all right, well, let's get right down to it and let's talk about the news that matters to video marketers. Yahoo Tech reports sometimes the mighty fall. And in the case of Amazon, they simply grow and grow at bigger and more formidable rates. With the current market cap of $390 billion with a big capital B, the Seattle-based retail giant is now worth more than the top 8 traditional brick-and-mortar retailers combined. And you need to think about this. Let me just back up. You know, young baby Amazon is now worth more than the top 8 traditional brick-and-mortar retailers. Remarkable, right? And the reason that they are is they capitalize on an opportunity. And currently, every one of us, including myself, love to do some type of drunk Amazon shopping on a Friday night. And then on Tuesday, when it arrives, Amazon Prime style to your office, you're like, what is this? Who sent me this? And you open up and go, I didn't buy something. And then it shows up and you're like, oh my God, I love it. This is great. I know you do that. Everybody does it. It's what makes Amazon great. And I have everything that I need sent to me at the office. If I need it at home, it gets sent directly there, and it makes my life significantly easier. The you know, that roster of the 8 retail giants that Amazon is larger than all of them combined, that roster includes Best Buy, Macy's, Target, JCPenney, Nordstrom's, Walmart, Kohl's, and Sears. Friggin' amazing. But leveraging digital works, and it works absolutely well, especially for SaaS products, because butts in seats are harder to scale with than a software service that has a bunch of people using it at one time. It's totally scalable. Hey, did you see the Snapchat video that shows the Jimmy John workers playing with dough? A Florida Jimmy John restaurant has come under fire after video surfaced on social media showing employees jumping rope that was actually made with Jimmy John's sandwich bread dough. Crazy, right? So the raw dough they had used and turned into a jump rope, and they filmed a Snapchat video out of it. Local news outlets reported on Tuesday that the footage was taken inside of a Jacksonville restaurant, was posted on Snapchat, and appears to show the dough literally with every single rotation hitting the ground several times as employees play with it. You know, look, I've worked in restaurants. I've unfortunately seen situations like this. And always, every time, I flipped out of my chicken while I witnessed it happening. Because, well, I mean, I like eating in restaurants, but I'm a germaphobe. And even when I was 20 years old and I was training at a new restaurant while talking to the head chef who was cutting calamari at the same time I was talking with him, right in front of me, the guy, he kneeled down while talking with me and started sharpening his knife using the concrete floor. And without washing it, started cutting calamari again. And I instantly flipped the f*** out. But that's not why I brought up this story. You see, there's a marketing takeaway for this Jimmy John Snapchat story. And if I ran marketing for Subway, right, I know exactly what to do. Because if I ran marketing for Subway sandwiches, my biggest competitor would be Jimmy John's. And I'd have a, they'd have a total social media crisis on their hands, and I'd hit Jimmy John's with that video, and I'd turn it into a viral marketing campaign that had three waves. Now, I want you to think about this. Let's spend a few moments. If you think about this Jimmy John's story and you giggle about it, you should also be thinking about it as a marketing exercise. I do this all the time. I look at a story, I exercise my marketing brain, and I say to myself, if I was in this situation, how would I handle it, right? All right, so I got a three-wave campaign for Subway that I'm going to tell you about. And it all revolves around video, which is the most powerful tool on the internet, as you know. Now, the goal of my campaign would not be what you think. It's not really about getting eyeballs on a Subway commercial. It's actually a little bit more in-depth, but I'll break it down for you. You see, I'm interested in using this Jimmy John's video as a marketing tactic and creating a huge media bonanza for Subway and a ton, just a ton of brand loyalty and support for Subway. It's actually really easy. Subway could instantly reconnect their customers with their Subway Eat Fresh positioning, and they'd have the opportunity to earn the quality watchdog brand, plus getting everybody to talk about why they can't eat at Jimmy John's anymore, which is ultimately the goal. If Subway spent $100 million, they'd have a harder time convincing people that they can't eat at Jimmy John's anymore than if they took this Jimmy John's embarrassing video of employees jump roping and flipping that into a campaign. So the first wave of my Subway marketing campaign would consist of a very small, limited commercial run where we repurpose the actual footage of Jimmy John's employees jumping rope with their sandwich dough. This is all in the public domain. It's available for Subway to use it. Plus, I'd create short Facebook-style autoplay videos, a series of Snapchat ads, and YouTube video ads targeted directly at men 18 to 35 years of age, which is their target demo. And I'm really doing this because I want the media to start freaking out over it, right? It's basically a publicity stunt. The media reacts to it. And before you know it, everybody and my mother is talking about the news story about the Jimmy John's employees jumping rope with bread dough and how disgusting Jimmy John's is. Think about what happened to Chipotle, which is owned by McDonald's, and how Chipotle had a salmonella issue with their pork, some kind of food poisoning issue with their pork, and how it absolutely destroyed their customer base, right? Now, the media would eat this up. Articles about Subway heckling Jimmy John's, which is really what's going on, would be everywhere. And more importantly, negative news about Jimmy John's would be plastered in print and across social media. In this situation, the best defense would really be a powerful offense, right? Most marketing is a strong defense. And this situation would be a little bit different because you'd really go out on offense and you'd change the game. Now, eventually the media would get tired of printing thousands of stories of Subway calling out Jimmy John's. And that campaign would start to get stalled out. Now, that's understandable, and you have to be prepared for that. So when I feel that happening, I would transition the campaign into the second wave. And when you transition into the second wave, what you're really doing is pumping up the jam, you know, pump up the jam, pump it up. You'd pump up the jam and the marketing campaign would start all over again, but phase two. You know, marketing is at its best when the target customer feels like they're actually part of an inside joke, and it happens at your competitor's expense. So I'd run that first rave of the campaign, and when people's interest started stalling out, I'd throw the next log onto the Jimmy John's fire. And the transition between the first wave and the second is not an amount of time. It's generally the question that people are going to ask. So, like, Todd, how long should we wait?
days.
Not an amount of time, but it could be like 21 days. It could be 45 days. It could be as short as 7 days. But instead of knowing in your calendar when to start the second wave, it's more about a feeling than a calendar date. When you start to feel and you start to see that the social shares and the news stories start dying out, give it a couple extra days after you start to feel it. It's okay to be a little bit long. It's not good to go too fast. But that's when the second wave of this campaign would start, all right? The second wave would be built around short pre-roll videos that would happen across social media, where each day I'd have a new pre-roll video featuring something that Subway is already promoting but not doing it in video and not putting it out on social. And it would be that Subway fresh deal of the day, made fresh by employees that never jump rope with your dough, right? And in the corner of the screen, we'd reinforce the point, I'd show 6 seconds of Jimmy John's employees jumping rope with bread dough, right? Those short pre-roll videos would play across social media and work in conjunction with 15-second short radio spots on stations that are listened to by 18 to 35-year-olds. I'd also do it on podcasts that are popular like this to 18 and 35-year-olds. Got it? And that podcast or those commercials, if I was still on radio, let's give you the radio version, but just extrapolate it into the other mediums from, you know, video pre-rolls to podcasts and so on. It would sound something like this. Well, he's Arizona Senior Senator John McCain joining me on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, where Subway employees would never jump rope with your dough like Jimmy John's did. Today's Subway Fresh Take deal of the day is their 6-inch Subway teriyaki chicken sandwich, where you get a bag of chips and a soda for $5.50. Subway, eat fresh all the time. When I was on the number one show in Arizona for a few years, we routinely heckled our competitors, and our audience absolutely loved it because I'm going to use a fishing metaphor here. We laid the hook the right way. We drop the bait. We dangle it. When they bite on it, we yank, right? So you drop that first wave of the campaign. You teach people about the Jimmy John's thing. Now your audience knows about it. That's the bait. Then you pull through the hook, which is the second phase. They bite on it again because now they know the bait. And bam, when you pull on it, they become part of your inside joke that you share with them. Routinely heckle your competitors. Sure, it's not the classiest thing to do, but in a game of winning, you got to do what it takes to win. And when you do it at your competitor's expense, it's a total win-win. Oh, by the way, don't be concerned, as I'm going to explain, of being a little aggressive to your competitors when your audience is 18 to 35-year-old males. They're already competitive. In fact, if you play the competitive game with your competitors, they're going to get the joke, right? They're going to get it because that's already how they talk to their friends. That's a whole culture of heckling. Speak directly to your target audience. Then when the latest second wave marketing campaign started to feel like the helium was leaving the balloon, dude, it could be a year, right? It could be 6 months, or it could be as short as 45 days or 21 days, but you've got to feel when that helium is leaving the balloon and it's less exciting, and not less exciting for the marketing team. It's not about you entertaining you. It's about you entertaining your audience. You start to see that there's a massive downturn in Twitter, or you start to see that maybe Jimmy John's is on a rebound and they're getting their mojo back, right, baby? You'll know when that happens. It'll help you reinforce that something that Subway is super passionate about. Subway is about the love of sandwiches and eating fresh and healthy foods. And you'd be shocked, right, if you work for Subway and you're part of the marketing team, and you'd even be a bit angry about Jimmy John's jumping rope, especially if you were a Jimmy John's customer, because that's a huge violation of trust. So as a member of the Subway marketing team, leverage it. Use it to your advantage. And I'd call this second phase the subtle extension of an inside joke, right? It's a subtle extension. And you know, as it starts to become less interesting to your audience, you move into the third phase. The third phase would be an even more subtle extension of the inside joke, but you get to use it longer. And I call this phase the 100% no GRB phase. Next to the Subway items on your menus, and that could be a menu in your store, it could be in your commercials, 100% no JRB. And today everything is no GF, right? No gluten-free or no GMO. But 18 to 25-year-olds or 18 to 35-year-olds, they don't give a f*** about GMOs. Don't care about gluten, not till they get to their 40s and their body's like, I can't do this anymore. But they do heckle people like me that can't tolerate gluten anymore. So what I'd like you to do is leverage that in your 100% no GRB campaign, where you'd create a subtle extension reminder of the Jimmy John's. And I would put it on the menu items just like where no GF goes, right? Or excuse me, where GF goes. So next to an item, it would say gluten-free, right? GF on the menu. And in this case, you're going to say 100% no JRB. Subtle extension, a reminder to your audience about the 100% no jump rope bread, JRB. No JRB. Okay? If you're playing for keeps, it's okay to turn your competitors into an inside joke that your supporters are absolutely going to love. They're 18 to 35-year-olds. This is the way they interact and communicate. They'll find it hysterical. It's very ballsy for a brand, and it's also directed at your target customers, men, 18 to 35-year-olds, the same people that would love to laugh at Jimmy John's expense. That's how I roll. Hey, did you see the VR 360 video from inside of the White House? It happened in the last few days of the Obama administration. President Obama and the First Lady gave a really cool tour of the White House residence and the West Wing using 360 digital VR virtual reality, all right? And, you know, everybody's talking about it and when, which if you go back to my Trends of the Year podcast, my 2017 trends, I went out and am one of the very first people to tell you that VR 360 is way too early. It's absolutely way too early to be a viable video platform for businesses. The perfect example is the White House did something very trendy, all right? And I think it's a marketing mistake, so let's talk about it so you don't step in the same pile, all right? So the White House did its VR 360. By the way, I'm not going to score any political points. That's not how I roll. I'm not even interested in political points. I'm not a member of either party. So keep in mind, when I tell this story, I'm not putting down the Obamas. I'm not supporting Trump. Just talking about video marketing, okay? I got to say this because in the American culture, everything seems to boil back down to politics. Wait, while I'm doing this, I need to take a little segue. I'll get back to VR 360 in a second. Almost every conversation that I've had here in Amsterdam with non-Americans has been about Trump. They are fascinated with Trump. They are fascinated with the American political process. Every TV I've walked by has had the news on it. Just like your audience, if you're Subway, being on the inside joke on Jimmy John's, people in Europe, Europeans, these are Germans, were making a joke about CNN being the Clinton News Network. And they get it. People are like, understand that, you know, everything in the media is fake news. So it's a really interesting time to be here because not only are they talking about the fake news, but they can't stop talking about the Kardashians. And all I wanted was to get away and take a little holiday from America. But I guess we're everywhere, and the mainstream media makes Trump out to be Hitler, so you get two reactions. You get the reaction of somebody that is excited about the about Trump and his persona and the end of the globalist agenda, because there's also a lot of Brits here and they get the Brit exit, and how that was part of a big globalist agenda to create a, you know, create an economic coalition with the EU, then create an economic problem that needs to be solved with a political solution, and then create one political group that could be controlled by a central authority. There are a lot of people that get that and see that that was also happening in America with the North American Union. And the other people here in Europe are scared about what the media is telling them about Trump and how he's going to round up foreigners and the detention of people coming into the U.S. that aren't citizens. Battle line's been drawn. Nobody's right and everybody's wrong. Thank you, Bob Dylan. Once again, you are spot on, my friend. Spot on. All right, so back to the VR360 story. Interesting, you need to know this. Don't make this mistake that the White House made in their closing days before they turned the administration or the office over to the Trumps. Every marketer should watch this video, and I'll make sure you have access to it on the show notes page for this episode, wirebuzz.com/60. It's a really good example of how limited VR360 is, how limited it is right now, and how it's not smart for businesses in almost every application to create a VR360 video if they want to tell a story. If you're going to tell a story, VR360 is not the thing to do. If you're going to give somebody access to what a hotel room looks like, or what your dining room or a banquet room looks like, VR360 is great. If you're going to take people on a tour, not so much, all right? And the reason is the viewing experience is absolutely horrible in VR360. The storytelling experience is disjointed. VR360 has the ability to take you around a room and you can look at the details of it, right? You look at the floor and the ceiling and the carpet, but it's not something that you're going to follow a speaker with who's going to be telling you a story like the president and Michelle Obama did. Sure, you can look around the room, but by doing so, you lose the details in the narrative. For example, there's a scene inside this video, and you've got to see it, inside the East Room where Michelle Obama is doing a fabulous job narrating the video. She references something super important. She's inside of the room where there's the original painting of George Washington that Dolly Madison saved when the British forces burned down the White House in 1814. It is iconic, this painting, a national treasure. But in the VR experience, I was actually looking in the opposite direction, right? I'm looking at the window treatments because my mom's a designer, looking at the patterns and the prints. So while Michelle Obama's referencing the Dolly Madison painting, I'm lost, looking somewhere else, stuck in my own unguided, opposite direction, unguided tour in VR wasteland. The video quality, really poor. The lighting, horrible. Especially if you're... So this whole thing with VR360, not ready for prime time. And you could see it. Because I really wanted, when I clicked on it, a video that would have been valuable. It would have been a great tour of the first family. It would have been a timeless classic. If they selected a traditional video, which would have been my recommendation, their user experience for the audience's ability to grasp and understand the story, the lighting and visual images would have been so much better. But at best, this VR360 video, which should be a timeless historical classic, you're getting a tour of the White House and the residence, right? It'll never be referenced again because they selected VR360 over telling the story in video. And they made this classic mistake. They selected something trendy over something that is proven to work time and again. And the only reason I watched the video a second time was to get the year that Dolly Madison saved that famous painting, which I couldn't see in the VR experience, as I mentioned, because I was looking the other way in the White House, in the Oval Office of the president's tour. As he's explaining the room and the meetings he's had and some of the history of the room, I'm looking at his shoes. It's the first time I get to see the guy's shoes. Don't make that mistake. Tell a very guided story. Your resources will go further. Your audience will appreciate more. And it'll be a timeless classic. If I got time with the president, if the White House approached me and they said they wanted to do a VR 360 video, the first thing I would have asked them is, what are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? I ask that with every client. You know why I start that way? Why I start with your goals? If I understand their goals, I can make a smart recommendation. I can do a much better job of helping them achieve those goals. And that's why with every video project that I'm involved in, the conversation starts with strategy. First question is, what are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? Then we lay out the strategy, which is our opportunity to make a very smart recommendation. Because if you don't, people are going to say, hey, we want to do a VR 360 video of the White House. We want to take people on a tour. You got to back them down off of that. You know, if I got time with the President of the United States or the First Lady in the most famous house and the most famous office in the world, the leader of the free world, right? That time's valuable. If I had time with my client's CEOs, I'd treat it the exact same way. I would produce a timeless classic video, something worthy of their time, so valuable that people can gain it as a resource for years to come. And a VR 360 project is often less valuable than a traditional video because VR, the VR user experience, isn't fixed on railroad tracks, where you take people through a story and you hold their attention all the way through. An easy way to remember the proper order is you don't start with the video type, okay? You don't start with the style. You start this way. Write this down, right? An easy way to remember the proper order is first you start with the goals. Everybody knows what their goal is. Hey, and actually, it's funny. In most cases, they can't even define the goals, which is sad. But you can get them by starting with the goals. They don't need to be the expert in strategy. I do. So after goals comes strategy. After strategy comes content type. And after content type comes style, right? Your goals will dictate your strategy. Your strategy will dictate your content type. The content type will influence the style. And sure, it would be super easy to jump on the trendy VR 360 bandwagon, but we should want to create something that has lasting value. This clearly did not. And when time permits, make sure you go and watch this video on the show notes page, wirebuzz.com/60, an easy way to remember the number 60. 60 is the number of years that lasts through a complete cycle in the Chinese lunar calendar. Got it? Wirebuzz.com/60. One way or another, I'm sure you watched the presidential inauguration either live or in the news, or you saw it in photos of it, or maybe you just saw it through disgust. But did you know if you used a drone during last week's presidential inauguration, you could get fined $1,400? Mashable reports that drone footage from Friday's presidential inauguration of Donald Trump would feature a new rule that the nation's capital is legally closed to drones. And as a video marketer, it's important we understand some of the drone rules. As I mentioned, I'm traveling with ours right now. That was my carry-on. When you're the boss, you get the lightest carry-on. And as the Secret Service has started reminding the public before the inauguration that piloting a drone in D.C. during the inauguration or otherwise could earn you a $1,400 fine. That's right. If it's a company-owned drone, the company owner could be fined $32,000. And in some cases, you could even be locked up. Yahoo Tech reported this week, Apple finally seemed to be warming up to the fact that it needs original programming if it ever hopes to compete in the TV space. Now, to be sure, There are no shortages of movies and TV shows available for purchase and rental via iTunes, but Netflix has demonstrated that a stable of high quality and exclusive content is what really moves the needle in today's ever-evolving entertainment age. Late last week, word surfaced that Apple is finally prepping to dive into the realm of original content headfirst, my friends, and according to a report from the Wall Street Journal, Apple has been busy talking with producers about developing episodes or episodic programming that's similar to the style of hit shows that you would see on HBO and Netflix, like HBO's Westworld or Netflix Stranger Things. You know, this is a promising development given that shows like Carpool Karaoke and Planet of the Apes aren't exactly thrilling programs capable of attracting a wide audience in the same way that a show like House of Cards can pull in viewers. You know, this isn't the first time that customers are being asked to purchase a device like Apple TV for their televisions. Okay, sure, Apple TV is one of these new television devices that allows you to get on the internet, but it's not the first time that we've seen this historical model. In fact, there are actually many, and if you don't know the historical models, you're really destined to go through this slow growth opportunity that Apple's experienced. I'm kind of embarrassed for Apple because they've got to be around my age. And when Atari came out, it was obvious to me Atari had to create exclusive gaming content that you could only get on Atari. Remember, as a video marketer, it is important for you to know content is king. And it's really the same. You know, the same is true. As a kid, I vividly remember 1982 when Atari released Namco's hit arcade game, Pac-Man. It was a watershed moment in my life. I got Pac-Man at home. Don't have to sit down with a roll of quarters or stand up at a stand-up Pac-Man table and play while my parents are having dinner. You know, that's how Atari drove people to buy their boxes. And then came ColecoVision. Intellivision, Nintendo, all of the historical examples of TV devices revolve around original programming. Content is king. So even though Yahoo Tech calls this information news, to me it's old news. It's really just historical common sense information. It's the same reason Netflix knew it had to create its own unique programming and that being a simple blockbuster wasn't going to be good enough to make them stand out from competitors. If they don't have original, unique content, all they're really doing is competing on price. But once you create things that are unique only to your platform, price doesn't become an issue. It now becomes want, right? You want something, you pay more for it. And as an Apple guy, maybe this is yet another example of Apple thinking it lives in an absolutely different world where the traditional laws of physics don't apply to them in Cupertino. But creating unique exclusive content, exclusive programming in order to sell devices should have been a no-brainer to anybody. Regardless if you're trying to sell a device or a service, you should always be creating unique proprietary value that your target customers can't get anywhere else. It's that unique value that enables you to stand out from the crowd and from your competitors. And this shouldn't be news to anybody, especially to Apple. Steve Jobs basically taught this business lesson, right, in life. And it would have been like business 101. He taught it to the world when he created iconic programming exclusive to his devices, found only in his computers. He created hardware and devices that had software that you could only use on a Mac or an iPhone or an iPad. Just think of GarageBand or iMovie or iTunes or Keynote. The list is endless. You want to know how I use my Apple TV? I use Apple TV, you know, stream Netflix, which I could do locally in my smart TV also, and I use Apple TV to watch on-demand iTunes shows, movies, or to stream something my DVR missed or I forgot to save, but I really wanted to. And rarely is Apple TV the only place I can get something, right? Normally, I've got like three different ways that I could get it. I could go through my smart device, my TV. I could probably go through iTunes and pull it up through a TV show, or I could do the same through Netflix, or I could go online. I mean, all these things are obvious, but the goal is to make Apple TV a must-have. So I kind of use Apple TV in a slightly different way. You know, Apple rolled out my favorite feature when they introduced Apple TV 4, and that's when they introduced exclusive, beautifully filmed aerial screensavers. So when I use Apple TV at the office, which I have this thing on every day, and when I use it around the house, I love to play music in iTunes and then turn on the screensavers of Apple's aerial drone footage over really cool cities like London, San Francisco, New York, and nature spots of interest like a beautiful, stunning forest in China or the ocean and waterfalls in Hawaii, right? Places I may never get to see. In fact, when we took the train with the Wirebuzz team, the first day when we got to London, and we were ice fogged in, I think you would say, and we took the train from London to go up to Amsterdam, I got really excited because in person I got to see the Apple TV aerial footage that I look at every morning of the London skyline and the buildings that I got to see. And some of the buildings that I look at every day at the office or at home actually were under development. And as they were under development, now I'm getting to see them in real time, in person, as they've been completed. I get to see that Fabergé egg building and some other, you know, I got to see Big Ben and Parliament as we were going through the city. I'm going to post a photo of the train station because you can see through the glass, look out over the Tower Bridge. And it was just stunning. Wirebuzz.com/60 is where you're going to find that. And a setting in Apple TV allows your device to check regularly for new aerial footage and then download them automatically. And only a few of them are downloaded at a given time. So what I'd like you to do is think about, there's a setting on there where you can allow Apple TV to refresh for local copies. And in December of 2016, Apple greatly expanded its list of screensavers. And if you want to see a full table of all the most current full library of Apple TV aerial locations, just go to the show notes page of this episode, wirebuzz.com/60. I'll make sure that they're up there, and they're different times of the day. So if it's the morning, you've got sunrise. If it's the daytime in your office, you've got normal daytime footage. If it's the afternoon or close to evening, you've got the sun setting. And then in the evening time, you've got all the really cool city lights that are happening. So it revolves with the clock of where you are, not necessarily where that city is on the other side of the world. And Christo and I were in the office one day. We were working late, and Apple TV was still playing. And we literally flipped out because we started to see drone footage on Apple TV that we've never seen before because we're not there at that time of night. It's pretty damn cool. Apple TV screensavers, wirebuzz.com/60. Big picture here with Apple TV. If Apple started giving us a downpouring of absolutely can't miss, much watch shows like House of Cards, I wouldn't be able to live without Apple TV. You'd be the same way. So my advice to Apple, Tim Cook, dude, make it rain, brother. Make it happen, and we'll watch. Give us something absolutely valuable. We'll start raving about it, bragging about it, sharing it socially. My mom will start watching it, talk with all of the girls that she plays cards with on Tuesday, and then it spreads like wildfire, all right? Facebook Live never fails. It's always in the news. And, you know, I've been tongue-in-cheek on this podcast about how people are using Facebook Live to stream their crimes, literally creating videos about their crimes, or maybe they don't even know they're about to commit a crime, but they're doing a Facebook Live thing. But last night, while I was here in Amsterdam, I had dinner with one of Facebook's top-level executives. And, you know, we're both speaking at the same event, advising the same clients, and the first thing he mentioned to me at dinner was, quote, We should have never kept that video live for as long as we did. And I shook my head. You know, I thought we were talking about the same thing. In my head, I thought he was talking about the teenage girl who committed suicide on Facebook Live, and that video lingered for nearly 2 weeks before Facebook removed it. And but he was talking about the hate crime of the four people who were charged with hate crimes, kidnapping, and battery after they did a Facebook Live video showing them attacking a Trump supporter. What I got out of our conversation was Facebook is terribly embarrassed about how people are using Facebook Live to commit crimes. But I don't even think it's even possible for Facebook to monitor, filter, and remove videos posted from 1.8 billion members. You know, as more Facebook users adopt live video, this problem only gets bigger. It becomes more and more common. There's a couple of things here. I think it's okay for Facebook to be embarrassed, but I also think that it's an indicator that Facebook Live is permeating public consciousness, that people are recognizing that if they get pulled over, they should do a Facebook Live video so they could share it with people in real time in case the police officer beats them up, right? And that's an indicator of saturation of public consciousness, that this tool's there. People are live streaming their New Year's Eves. They're live streaming weddings. They're live streaming partying with friends. And often when people commit crimes, what they're really doing is they feel justified. They're so angry inside when they're violent to somebody else, but it's the justification of something else. But I think the bigger topic, and maybe this changes the way that I report to you each week about crimes that people are committing on Facebook Live, because, you know, I don't think it's Facebook Live's problem. I don't think it's Facebook's fault that people are using Facebook Live in this way. You know, the developers didn't intend for it to be used this way. It's not why they built it. If somebody commits a crime and they use a Ford F-150 as their getaway vehicle, like let's say they rob a bank, Ford's not the one that should be blamed, right? If somebody uses a car to plow over pedestrians, it's not Volvo's fault that somebody used their car. You know, I really try my best not to blame inanimate objects for human actions. Do you get it? Facebook Live is an inanimate object. It's not Facebook's fault. It's not that somebody committed a crime. Facebook is neutral. It's an inanimate object. It's neutral. It's like water, right? You can do great things with water. Water can be used to grow crops. It can be used to sustain life. You can use water to move very large logs of wood down the river when the lumberjack cuts them down. And then it can go down river on water, and it can be used for homes or for siding or to build furniture. But water can also be used in bad ways. You can use water to drown people or to boil a frog or a lobster alive, right? It is neutral. It is neither good or bad. It is the human and how they use it that is to blame. But far too much in our culture, we place human responsibilities onto inanimate objects. And I'm not going to do that with Facebook Live. Needless to say, Facebook Live still in the news. Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown, you know, had a Facebook Live stream when the Steelers won over the Chiefs leading into the Super Bowl, and he included taping his coach Mike Tomlin speaking to the team, and without knowing it, the coach mentioned stuff that was quite personal and made a disparaging comment about the Patriots, which is totally understandable. I mean, who wouldn't make a disparaging comment about the Patriots? But that ain't Facebook's fault, right? It's Tomlin's fault. It's Antonio Brown's fault. But Facebook in this situation is neutral, like water. They're an inanimate object. How Antonio Brown used it is a different story. But the NFL Network reported on Sunday that Brown has a high-dollar marketing deal with Facebook, right? So maybe Facebook isn't so neutral here. The network says the deal's worth six figures. Brown was fined $10,000 following the Pittsburgh Steelers' playoff victory against the Chiefs earlier this month after posting the Facebook Live video of his team's locker room conversation. So the dude got fined 10% of his Facebook deal, which means he made a 90% profit. Not a bad deal at all. You know, Brown violated the NFL and team social media policy for posting the video before reporters had completed their post-game work. So the policy is reporters get it first before the players can promote it. That's kind of interesting. And a league source told Pro Football Talk that, quote, Facebook actually encouraged Brown to engage in a Facebook Live session from the locker room after the game. Now, I didn't bring this up in the dinner. We just had so many Facebook things to talk about. As a frequent listener of this podcast, you know that I've been trying to figure out what a Facebook employee's name is. Googlers. Googlers are the name for Google employees. But what's the name of a Facebook employee? So we talked about that at dinner. I told them that I call them Facebooklers or Zuckbergians. He said, well, I don't know if we have an exact name, but I have heard, he told me, I've heard Facebookers. I prefer Facebooklers and Zuckbergians as the official name, or at least Todd Hartley's official name for Facebook employees. TechCrunch reported YouTube is making a change in a prominent video discovery feature on the site in order to showcase more videos made by newer creators and music artists. Now, the company says that it'll begin to highlight those video makers who are on the rise, the up-and-comers. And they're doing it in its trending tab in the U.S. and will rotate the selection of promoted videos on a weekly basis. Each week, YouTube's going to select two creators and two musician artists to be featured in their trending section based on a number of factors. It's kind of interesting here how they're doing it. Important for video marketers to know if this fits in your niche. And in order to be considered, YouTube will need you to have over 1,000 subscribers at a minimum. And selection will also be based on view count, watch time, and subscriber growth. More information on that, wirebuzz.com/60. All right, if you want to know where to get started with video marketing, if it's time for your business to start thinking about using video to amplify your sales results. And while I was here in Amsterdam, one of the conversations that I had was teaching a client about how to use video to shorten their sales cycle, to convince and convert at faster rates. As a frequent listener of this podcast, you already get it because we talk about it a lot. I've shared with you case studies. And before I sign off, I want to tell you about my case study and the results from Amsterdam on how I was going to use video to get more deals in my funnel. Now, in the past, I've shared with you that the best marketers, the best digital marketers, are not know-it-alls. They're more scientists than know-it-all. They're more gold miners doing drill samples, cheap, inexpensive drill soil samples before they invest all their marketing resources. And what I do is I'm always running what I call micro tests, right? If you want to know more about micro tests, go back to the last episode, episode 59, wirebuzz.com/59, and listen to it because I also explain what you can learn from watching the Discovery Channel's most watched show on Friday night, Gold Rush, and what video marketers can learn from those big dummies on that show, right? So I'm always running a series of micro tests because it's the early adopters that get the largest percentage growth. And I'm not happy with 3% growth, and I'm not happy with 10% growth. I'm happy with 100% or 150% growth. And the only way you do that is you run a best practices campaign, and then behind the scenes, you are constantly running micro tests. So the micro test that I ran before this trip revolves around personalized video. Now, I shared with you that I created a personal video for everybody that I wanted to meet with here in Amsterdam, and that I already had 5 meetings booked, but I wanted to get 10 or 15 meetings booked, right? And so what I did is I pulled a list of 20 people that I wanted to absolutely positively meet in Amsterdam that were VPs or chief marketing officers that could potentially become customers. You could be doing the same thing in your sales cycle to be getting new deals and to turning cold leads into warm, hot meetings and relationships. So I created a personalized video where I took my camera and I said something like, "Hey, John, it's Todd Hartley, the video guy. Are you going to be in Amsterdam in 2 weeks at the big European Cancer Conference? If so, we absolutely need to meet. I need to talk with you about how the leading companies in the fight against breast cancer use my work and services to speed up their sales cycle. Here's a quick video about the quality of work that I produce." And then you break away and you see a video of our quality, right? And I put those two pieces together, part A and part B. Part B was pre-produced. Part A was me talking directly to the person I want to meet. And I did like, I was going to do 20 of them because I figured if I put out 20, maybe I'll get 4 meetings, right? But I'm a classic overachiever. I also knew that if I did a case study with 20 people, I wouldn't have a good enough population size. So I wanted to bring you a better number. So I rolled into the office on a Sunday and I recorded 90 personalized videos, 90 of them. I was there all day. "Hey, Steve, it's Todd Hartley, the video guy. Hey, David, it's Todd, the video guy. Hey, Joseph, it's Todd, the video guy." And if I got one that was like Brian and there were 5 Brians, I sent them to all the 5 Brians that I knew were going to the conference, right? And I want to tell you about the results of this case study, and I want to tell you how well it worked for me because it's actually rather exciting. I had some freelancer in the Far East pull together my list, go onto LinkedIn, grab the names of the people that were going to be there, and pull their email addresses. Just a quick Google search with the company's name with the @ in front and .com at the end of the URL, and instantly you can pull up what the company's email chain is, right? Is it like john.jones@companyname.com? Is the email chain something like jjones@company.com? You get the idea, right? Every company is slightly different. And if you just Google, you get the name. Well, anyway, the guy pulled together a list of me of 100 names. I sent it out to 90 with personal video. I absolutely, positively, 100% failed on my case study. Okay? It failed. And in a way, it failed so bad, I was embarrassed for a couple of days. I didn't tell anybody. Sure, I had my meetings in Amsterdam that were quite valuable and very lucrative. Plus, we also filmed for 2 different clients while we were here, and it was a profitable trip. But I didn't get the additional meetings that I was hoping to get by using video. Now, that doesn't mean that video didn't work. In fact, if I go into my metrics, the fault with the project, the case study's Achilles heel, was not my personalized video. It was the emails all bounced back to me, almost everyone. So the guy that pulled together my list did a half-assed job, and it really crushed my case study because every step in the process needs to be thorough, all right? So I'm not done with this case study. I mean, I'm done with this incarnation. I'm going to continue on, and I will give you a campaign about how personalized video affects change. Stay tuned. It'll be coming up in a future episode of Video Marketing Mastery. And I think it's also important for you to know that I'm not embarrassed to tell you it. The reason is you need to get comfortable if you want to be a master at running these micro tests. Most are going to fail. Some are going to yield really big results, and you're going to use those tactics for 6 months, for 6 years, and it's going to become your new best practice. And once you find a new one, well, that's when you continue on with your next micro test. You never sit on the best practice and don't do any research. Always be a scientist, always looking for the next big opportunity to impact growth, perfect your process, optimize how you convince and convert, and your revenue will continue to go through the roof. Aye? So I leave Amsterdam tomorrow. I've got my last 24 hours here. I've got another meeting today. I'm at the Dylan Hotel, which I'm going to put a link up on the show notes page. I'll drop a couple of photos because the place is just absolutely remarkable. It is the most expensive hotel in Amsterdam. And I'm not paying for it. A client is. And the place is stunning. Every little detail. You know, my mom's a designer of celebrity homes in LA. So in my DNA is an appreciation for design elements. The floor, the textures in the floor in every room are different, but they're all old world. Some rooms, they're thinly sliced brick, old world brick, that are laid in a herringbone pattern. You'll see that in the photos. Some rooms have old wood floors that are so old you're honored to walk on them, right? And you're going to see inside there's a room with a fireplace, some beautiful bedrooms with gorgeous wood, very clean, very classy. I've had a ton of meals in this place, lots of beautiful wine. I am so spoiled. The Dylan Amsterdam is the place to go. If you can't afford it, go and have, I think the food was reasonably priced. Go have a glass of wine, soak it up. I walked in several times before I checked in. Nobody really questioned if I was staying there. So by all means, make it your little getaway. If you can't afford to stay there, make the bar and the living room place where you sit down and have an espresso, because the good life is right there at the Dylan in Amsterdam. Anyway, this was a wonderful episode. Thank you for letting me take you along in my journey to Amsterdam. But the big picture is video is strong. It is well. The guy at Facebook that I met with even said to me, Zuck is so fired up. The whole company is so fired up. And his whole speech that he gave to the audience here in Amsterdam was all about video first and VR 10 years away. I've been telling you that. In fact, when I spoke, people came up to me later and was like, wow, your speech sounded just like the guy at Facebook. And yet it was my first time meeting him, my first time hearing him speak, but my first time really understanding, engaging from my intimate conversation with him over dinner about how embarrassed Facebook is with what's going on with Facebook Live and how the public is using it to share crimes or to promote hate. And, you know, it's kind of interesting and sad, and you're going to see that I'm going to transition in the way that I talk about some of these news stories that are happening with Facebook Live, because I don't want anybody for a moment to think that Facebook Live is at fault, because I know it isn't. It's just an inanimate object. Anyway, thank you very much. If you want to get started with video marketing, you want to know where to get started and how to choose profitable video topics for your business, just go to wirebuzz.com/topics. And that's where you get a topic selection worksheet. It's a free worksheet that we created that'll help you select the most profitable topics for your individual specific business. Wirebuzz.com/topics. And if you love this podcast, if I'm giving you good value, if I'm teaching you to be a smarter marketer, please share this podcast with your friends and with people that you root for. Make sure that your clients understand the value of video and how it'll change their business. And I will do my job. Each and every week, I'll report live from wherever I am around the globe. And if you want to see the Facebook Live event that I do for Breast Cancer Answers, go to Breast Cancer Answers on Facebook, and you'll see that up there. You'll see yours truly talking with one of the world's leaders in breast cancer, bringing back the information that patients absolutely need to know. And I think that's about it. I'm going to give you a big peace out from Amsterdam, and I'll look forward to talking with you. Hey, my flight home tomorrow, I go through Iceland, through Reykjavik, and I got a little bit of a layover. If my layover's long enough and I'm not racing my ass to the next plane, I'm going to sit down and I'll do another podcast from there. I've got plenty of information to share with you, and that will call, it will call that Toddcast a in-between-isode. How do you like me now? An in-between-isode. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me here at episode 60. And from Amsterdam, Todd Hartley, peace and out to all of you.